Hello, happy Sunday. This is Swan Drishti.
And this is Nesa Lozano.
You're listening to Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. Thanks for being here. And today in the studio I have Nesa, and my friend James is visiting from Utah, from Portland, from somewhere. He's here now. And they're both here to help me interrogate the brilliant Charlie Neiland. Brilliant by our standards. He rolled his eyes, but.
Thank you.
So welcome. And just a quick blurb. You are a musician, producer, writer, engineer, and longtime participant in the BBC, the Bushwick Book Club, not to be confused with the BBC, which is like the small
British
production.
Yeah.
It's just like a little thing that somebody.
The book club
made.
Towers over it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, by far.
So thank you for coming. Welcome. And I like to start my shows off with a quick free write, if you're willing and able.
Okay.
So that's hence we were throwing out paper earlier.
All right.
Makes sense now. So my poem comes with a story this week. James and I went to a party last night, and they had hosted the Nerd Olympics, and we played all kinds of fun games, and there was one question about a poem, and I was like, so I had those moments where I was like, I actually know something. So the poem is Harlem by Langston Hughes. Have you guys, does that sound familiar?
I have not heard of it.
I'm not familiar with it, but I know who Langston Hughes is.
Oh, splendid. The question was like, what's the name of the poem? Someone said Dream Deferred, and I was like, no. The name of the poem is Harlem. It's really short, so I'm going to read it twice. And then with river writing, what you do is you're just going to grab the phrase or the concept that's standing out to you. Use that as your starting point for a 3 to 5 minute free write. If for some reason nothing's standing out to you, you can write against the prompt. If you get stuck during the writing, you can revisit that first line or say what I really want to say is blank. Questions, comments, concerns, fears?
Okay, I think I got it.
Okay, so Harlem by Langston Hughes. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun? Or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat? Or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load. Or does it explode? I'll read it one more time. Harlem by Langston Hughes. What happens to a dream deferred? Does it dry up like a raisin in the sun, or fester like a sore and then run? Does it stink like rotten meat, or crust and sugar over like a syrupy sweet? Maybe it just sags like a heavy load, or does it explode? So 3 to 5 minute free write, go. Pen to the page, just keep moving.
Thank you.
slowly start winding down your writing, finishing the thoughts, finding a nice spot to stop. Finishing that last line, that last phrase. And see. Thanks for doing that, guys. So part of river writing includes the invitation to share. Is anyone willing to share what they wrote? Or I can go first. I haven't gone first yet. Or does it explode? I like the abrasiveness of an exploding dream. Dive in and dive deep, or sit on the surface, unmoving, rooted in fear, or your version of reality. Either way, things are going to happen. What happens when dreams explode? Are new galaxies and planets formed, stars 1,000 miles away, stars 1,000 miles deep beneath the skin? Or does it explode because dreams are flashy and powerful and will make themselves known through gentle breezes or sudden and unexpected gusts? Combustible dreams.
I like that. That was very good. Yeah,
thank you.
That was better than mine.
No. It's not a competition.
I know.
And no pressure to read.
I didn't mean to say that. I know.
Are you interested? Yeah, go ahead, okay. If you're willing.
The dreams that explode are the ones that open the path that you're on. Sweet or bitter, the dark or luminous, each moment shows that the dream deferred is only the one that hasn't broken through yet. Some dreams just need to ripen or rot, and then they break through, shattering the day they need to.
Ooh.
Wow.
Ooh, thank you.
That was...
Yum. Would either of you care to read?
This seems fun. I love it. I wanted to. But didn't know how to. So I waited. I saw. And when it was available, it happened.
Thank you.
That's beautiful.
Go ahead, Nisa.
All right. Mine reads more like a journal entry, so...
Perfect.
Boom. What does happen to a dream deferred? I think this is a question much of my generation is fighting with. You wake up in pursuit of two things, what you're passionate about and the well-being of those you... the well-being of yourself and those you love. But one wins out, or maybe that's just me. I work so hard for my dreams, but the sacrifices of everybody weighs heavy. So I put it off, for them, for my own stability, financially, not sanity. Or is this just an excuse? If it pusses out or wrinkles, I hope I see it. So the fear of it, of that image, can push me forward. So something can outweigh my fear of failure.
Ah, thank you. Wow. Thank you guys so much for doing that with me. I get the biggest kick out of this nice. Spontaneous creation.
They're all very different.
They're all beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like they're all beautiful.
Yeah, the magic of river writing.
We are beautiful.
We're so beautiful, guys. Which leads to another form of spontaneous, a little bit less so, creation rooted in a book, the Bushwick Book Club. Wait, created by
Susan.
Curated,
I like to say. Wong.
Sorry, thank you. Yes. So we are having a show this Thursday coming up, and a lot of wonderful musicians will be there. I'll be there doing a thing.
Filmmakers, too.
And some filmmakers. Cool. And we're all doing something inspired by the book Catching the Big Fish by David Lynch. And I would love to hear a little bit about your process and your experience with this particular project, this book, or in general, whatever thoughts come first.
Yeah. Well, The you know, it's you obtain the book.
Mm-hmm. I got mine through the library.
And then you start looking at it. I mean, this book is actually pretty easy to get through. There's some books where it's just like, oh my God, I have to read this book and write a song in like 3 weeks. And it's just like, it's a little much. But this book I was able to read a couple times. And it's, you know, it's, this book is a lot of recollections of his experiences with transcendental meditation and his thoughts about it. And then also kind of a look at various creative moments he's had working on films and describing that process.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like little short essays. So it's a little different than taking a narrative and adapting that to a song or whatever, like in some of the other book clubs that we've worked on. I mean, you just worked on Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
Yeah.
The last one, and I did too.
Yeah.
That was fun.
It was fun.
But this looks a little different because there's, yeah. I don't know.
I mean, there's not really like the plot or the characters. It's
right.
More...
It's like, more like kind of up to you to apply what he's talking about into some kind of linear thing as far as writing a song goes.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it's funny, I had been to a sound meditation a couple months ago, and this phrase popped in my head, and that became like sort of the basis of my song, or the starting point of the lyrics. Which was, there is nothing to defend. That's just, I don't know, that phrase popped in my head.
Yeah.
It was like kind of a rough week, and the sound meditation ended up being kind of like a... It was a nice opening up of things for me that day.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those sound bath things. Dude,
would you tell me, if I've never experienced, what is this sound thing like, meditation?
This particular one was the New Moon... Double Gong meditation, and they do it on 6th Street and around Avenue C,
mm-hmm.
on around the new moon every month. It's like a once a month thing. And Emily and Lucy are these two women, and they have a variety of sound making things and two like kind of Chinese looking gongs, like circular gongs. I'm making hand gestures.
Yeah,
on the radio show.
You can't see.
Yeah. And as the meditation develops, it starts off with just little jingling sounds. We all lie down, mm-hmm. and they say to close our eyes, and they start rubbing the gongs and making these sort of like subtle rumbling, roaring sounds. Mm-hmm. And then it gets louder and louder, and then they start like shaking the gongs a little bit, and then it gets softer. And
mm-hmm.
it's a very like these waves of sound build up.
Mm. So and vibration.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they're very sensitive to the vibrations and.
Because that's when, I don't know if you guys have ever played a singing bowl, but one of the first things, if someone's showing you how to use it, they're going to show you how to slowly spin the wooden dowel around. But then if it starts to vibrate, that's the singing bowl like wanting to breathe. You don't want to like keep twisting that thing around the top if it's vibrating too much.
They use those too.
Yeah.
And that's what they're getting the gongs to do also.
Yeah.
And they're bigger, you know, so.
That sounds cool. You just like feel it through.
Yeah, and it goes on maybe over an hour.
Yeah.
I've been to one that lasted for 4 hours.
So,
another different
one. Yeah, this reminds me of a sound healing ceremony I did when I lived in Utah. And it was a similar thing. This, you know, the person facilitating had a bunch of different instruments. And he started out with some really primal sounds, drums, beats, like, you know, and then moved more towards electronic. And actually the song that I used for the free write is by him. His artist name is East Forest. It's more ambient stuff if you're interested in that. But he finished with a big crystal singing bowl, and he went around to each person in the room and put it on their heart, on their chest, and did it. And everyone's had a different sound. Like, it was the strangest thing. And then he puts it on you and you just feel it through your whole body, like, ooh, and you're like, what is happening?
That's great.
Yeah. Anyways, so there's nothing to defend.
Yeah. So that became part of my song, which is now called Nothing. And then, you know, of course, I took phrases and things that inspired me from the book.
Yeah, that's what, for me, that's kind of how I approach it, as I read it upon completion, like reflect, okay, what's still standing out to me? What what is still striking me.
I mean, I do a thing. Actually, what he described a thing in the book of, what did he call it? Gathering firewood or something, or gathering sticks or kindling or something.
Yeah.
That I often do that. I will get a general idea of what I want to write the song about, and then I go through the book and I start pulling out little phrases and images, just making a little pile of them. Mm-hmm. And then as I start to try to fill out the imagery for the song, I like reach for things in there. Because part of it, you know, book club, a lot of people in that we're playing for are the participants of the book club.
Uh-huh.
So
I always want for them, fellow artists.
I always want them to enjoy
and also be like, oh, I know.
In the song, they're like, oh, yeah good definitely. Reference to the book we all read, you know. So that's part of the fun. So
it's like being a part of a club.
This book was a little different, though, because
club. Sorry. The nerd in me.
Anyway, as of last night, I only had like a couple little parts. And then I ran into this other inspiration. I was listening to an interview with a guy, a Bob Dylan scholar, the other morning at like 5 a.m. And I was coming home from the studio. And he was talking about how Dylan was influenced by a poem by Rambo called The Drunken Boat. And so I went, I read The Drunken Boat for a little while, and I was like, oh, this is actually really cool. And it's from the point of view of a boat being released from its role and its handlers and just being dashed out into the ocean and thrown around. And you know, there's a lot of ocean imagery in the in David Lynch's book when he refers to diving into the ocean of your of the consciousness or the but I thought this other image of really completely losing your identity kind of caught me. It was in Drunken Boat, so I was kind of working that in too.
Ooh, I like it. For me, there was three things that stood out. I talked about how I finished, and then I was like, what's standing out to me? And he shares about how in his making of films, he really loves the movement of characters from darkness into light. And that really struck me.
I like that line.
Because if you watch his films, like,
he does that a lot.
But it's powerful too, and it happens. It's so beautiful. The other thing I loved is he talked about the texture of dead things. And he says, the next time you see something dead, like, walk up to it and just like appreciate the texture of what's happening to this creature. And I'm like the kind of person that I'm like, oh, a dead bird, let me like get closer. Like,
that's awesome. Really, that resonated with you a bit when he said that.
Yeah. And then the last thing that resonated for me was him talking about his anger and how he started meditating, and then his wife at the time was like, okay, what gives? And he's like, what are you talking about? She's like, you're not angry anymore. Like, what are you doing? What happened? And he talks about how meditation just kind of, and his films are dark and there's like, you know, a lot of emotions in them. But for him as a person, meditation, like,
he talks about that a lot in the book.
Yeah. And I felt that was so beautiful because how often, and especially, I mean, I look at how reactive I am. I ride my bike and I'm like, ah, fuck you. Like, right. I'm like, oh, wait, what? I'm reacting. For me, so many people are operating from a space of anger. And what if that shifted?
It's an interesting thing about living in the city, and it kind of puts you in a reactive stance often because we're all up against each other and all these energies going in different directions. But there's an organic whole to it that I think he's saying you could relate to if you open yourself up to the consciousness, the self or whatever from the Upanishads and everything. But I was also inspired by, in his films, there's often a song used in a really critical point in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the song is like incredibly beautiful, but melancholy, very dark, but very beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want a song
that's
like that.
That's your song.
I want to do one of those David Lynch songs because he uses... there's this piece called Song to the Siren by This Mortal Coil. He uses that in Lost Highway. And that's sung by Liz Fraser from Cocteau Twins. And it's a really beautiful song.
I know this song.
And then in Mulholland Drive, he does that Rebecca Del Rio singing Lorado, singing the Spanish version of Crying. It's an incredible moment in the movie where she just takes over.
You have a copy of the book, and I'm not sure what the song is, but he shares an instance of wanting a song. Someone finds it, and he's like, "Whoa, whoa, whoa! That's not the right version." And he like hunts
down. He's talking
about
the Adagio for Strings,
yes,
by Barber, and he's looking for the. He'd heard a particular recording of it, and then finally he heard the, I think the Andre Previn.
Yeah, that sounds right.
That was the one.
Yeah, that's the one he needed.
And what film did he use that in again? Oh, Elephant Man, I think he said.
Oh, yeah.
That's an incredible piece. They used that for, John F. Kennedy's funeral and stuff. It's incredibly, anyone can relate to it. It's just really emotive, slow buildup of strings. It's about, 7 minutes long. It's a really nice piece. But so, anyway... My goal was to try to write a song. Like that.
No pressure.
I don't know if I achieved it, but that was my inspiration.
Anyway. Well, you brought your notes and your guitar.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess.
Are you willing to share? This is like the the top secret exclusive preview.
Right, and we've talked about the fact that I'm coming next week. So you know, often with this process. It usually changes a couple days before the book.
Yeah, that happened to me last time, and I'm sure it will happen
so
again.
So it might be different. or I might just like it. But I'm also going to be working on an arrangement with Susan Huang and Marlon Cherry. And that'll make it more emotive. And I kind of have a vision of it being, I think I'll play electric guitar with a violin bow. And I just ruined the surprise.
If you want, doesn't that sound amazing?
Okay. It really does.
Yeah. If you want to see it, we're playing Thursday night at, what's the space called? The
Counter-Evolution.
Counter-Evolution. It's on 17th Street.
Near
6th Avenue. And it will be fun. And it's 8 p.m. Thursday.
Yes.
June 9th. Bushwick Book Club.
So this is called Nothing. I'm playing on acoustic guitar today. I'll just shut up. I don't want to be apologizing for things.
You don't have to.
I know. So I haven't really even barely played this through, so there might be some halts and starts and stops and stuff. So.
I like it.
That's going to be more arranged by my favorite musicians when we play it. But you get the idea.
It's an amazing little effect. Yeah.
I want to be like kind of hovering thing in the beginning.
That was my dog shaking. Dog,
yeah. I think she was giving appreciation.
She was she was clapping with her harness.
But yeah, that's the first time that song has ever been even played, really. Like,
I feel so privileged.
I know.
Yeah, it's seemed done. I mean, I understand change, but it felt done.
Yeah, it feels pretty good. It felt really less done about, like, you know, 12 hours ago.
So that's where I'm at. I'm like, it's all in my head. Now I just need to actually do it a lot of times. So that, like, the whole practice so you can perform.
I wanted to have it done so I can work on the performance aspect.
Yeah, that's my, like, it's like anti-yoga, I was thinking, because in my yoga classes I used to be like, this is a practice, this is not a performance. And then, like, this is a performance.
My first book club, which was...
That's so funny, because I was just going to ask you, please tell us about the first book club that you participated in.
Okay. So that was the summer of 2012. No, 2013. Mm-hmm. So that'll be 3 years ago this summer. And a friend of mine named Jesse Kilgus, who's also playing on Thursday, who I've had produced and worked with for many years, she was like, you should come do Bushwick Book Club. And she talked about it for a little while. And then so I was like, yeah, I'll do it.
And did you know Susan before that?
I did not at all. So that was when I met her on the day of this first book club. And... the book was called The Killer Angels, and it was a book about the Battle of Gettysburg. A very detailed book about the Battle of Gettysburg.
Strange.
It was like 500 pages.
Oh, my goodness.
And I admit, I did not have time to read the entire book. And I found...
Confessions.
I found Spark Notes online.
Yes!
And they had a very... you know, large posting of it.
Thank you, Spark Notes.
Thank you. I read everything in Spark Notes about the book. It took like 2 hours. And then that enabled me to focus in on what part of the book I wanted to write the song about. So then I read that 100 pages of the book. And anyway, that was my process. And, you know, I'd never written a song. I mean, I've written a song based on books before.
Yeah, but you get inspired.
But not about like a Civil War story. You know, it was like kind of a new thing. So... you know, I picked like the most dramatic battle, the decisive battle of the Battle of Gettysburg, which was called Pickett's Charge, where they just creamed the Confederates as they tried to rush up the hill. It was carnage, you know. Mm-hmm. And I thought of it very cinematically. Like I wanted to write like a really beautiful sort of hovering song about this horrible battle, like that was like in a film when like it all goes into slow motion and the horrible battle sequence, and it's like actually very ethereal, but it's like really gory. And so that was the approach. And then I got really worried about having it ready for performance, you know, and having the words memorized and everything, because I thought, oh my God, I'm going to go up there and I'm not going to be able to remember. It takes me weeks to remember a song usually.
Yes.
And then when I got there, everyone was reading off of pieces of paper, and people had just written songs the night before. And it was such a relief. It has a little bit of a songwriter's workshop vibe to it.
Yes.
That really took the pressure off. And I was like, oh, whew.
Yes.
And I went last. You know, Susan says she figures it, she uses her pendulum and figures it randomly.
But
I've gone last a whole bunch of times. I'm not really sure why. But I've really enjoyed it, actually. It's kind of fun to go last, because then you just go for broke, and it feels, like, really exciting.
Mm-hmm. And you're the headliner at the show?
It feels a little bit like that. A couple other times, I was, like, last. I was like, oh, my God. And I was like, wait a minute, I'm going to make this work.
And see, I'd rather go first and, like, get it over with.
I know.
Otherwise, I'm sitting there just, like, sweating.
That's the other side. Sitting through the whole thing, like, it's hard to enjoy everybody's performance.
You're like, that was like, nice. I haven't.
I'm partially shut down like for the entire thing.
Yeah, that's me. Yeah. Anytime there's like any volunteers, I'll like count to 10. And if no one volunteers, I'm like, okay, I'll do it.
I do the same thing.
And if it's like an obligatory thing, like you're going, I'm always like, I'll go first. Was it like the river riding when I was doing workshops? I was always like, I'll read. And finally she's like, someone besides Swan want to read first. Like, it's like, get this over with. Yeah, but that's interesting that she, you know, randomly assigned you to go last. Yeah.
So are you a natural headliner? Is that what that means?
I don't know. I haven't gone last recently, but there was a string of them where I went last, and I was like, okay, I'm going to step up.
I feel like that means that her pendulum just really wanted you to headline. Her pendulum was like, this person.
But I love how this operates, too, because she just, like, picks books at random. Like, they did the Q encyclopedia one time, and just like there's no rhyme or reason to what you will end up reading and then have to create something from. And love that.
I've seen her go through her process with it, and it really changes. She'll tell me one thing.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden,
even this book, I think, like, she's like, okay, I'm giving myself a deadline. Throw me your suggestions. I kept sending her books. So I was like, they loved this. I loved this. And, like, and then she announced this one.
Yeah. And I was like, oh, that was not perfect. What you were talking about 2 days ago. Yeah. But great.
So she has a fickle pendulum.
I think those are the best ones, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, I believe so. it depends on what you do with them.
Well, you know, it's just another thing to look forward to is just her songs at each of these book clubs.
Yeah.
I think she's a genius, and I'm really lucky to work with her. I'm producing some of her songs, and she has an EP coming out of book club songs.
Quick break. This is Ink and Worm on Radio Free Brooklyn. And you can catch the podcast on Audio Boom, Stitcher, iTunes, and I'm on all the socials, Swan Drishti, or you can do a Google search for Ink and Worm, just all spelled out. Also, we're celebrating Brooklyn Pride. There's the 20th anniversary, and there's a series of events June 6th through the 11th. There's a Monday reception at Borough Hall, full days of activities on Saturday, June 11th. The day starts with a 5K in Prospect Park, and then our festival, entertainment, family space, and parade on Fifth Avenue. Check out the full events and learn about getting involved at the website brooklynpride.org. I was supposed to read that, so check.
Good job.
Yeah.
Thank you. So you've been participating in a lot of Bushwick book clubs, but you also produce and are involved in the music world outside of this. How did you come about to, I guess, be so active in that world?
Well, I came to New York out of college in Hampshire College in Massachusetts, and then just started making music with people. Hmm. And then I formed a band with my wife, Nancy, and it's called Her Vanished Grace.
And the opening song was by you guys.
That was a Her Vanished Grace song. And so over the years, I started, you know, I was producing our music. And then at a certain point, maybe about 10 years ago, I started having the opportunity to work with other people and produce their music after working on a film score for this film called Safety of Objects. It's a really cool film with Glenn Close and
people in it. I've never heard of it. Safety of Objects.
Yeah, the Safety of Objects. It's a kind of a Altman-esque kind of P.T. Anderson-ish kind of movie. It's an indie film, but this has a big cast.
Uh-huh.
Patricia Clarkson and a bunch of people. Kristen Stewart before she became famous for the Twilight things. And during that I produced some stuff that was, you know, other people's music. And I always thought that I didn't have the brain space to produce other people's music, that I was just, I was an artist and recorded and produced. It was part of my artistic process of writing and playing. But I found as I started doing it, it actually inspired me to do my music even more. So I just kept doing it. And I was in a production team called Super Buddha for a while. And we worked out of Greenpoint. And that's when we eventually hooked up with Debbie Harry and produced a bunch of stuff for her.
Mm-hmm.
There was that solo album she put out in 2007 called Necessary Evil. And I think I wrote like 13 songs on that with Debbie.
That's fantastic.
And then wrote a bunch of songs after that with her that have subsequently, a couple of them got used on the Blondie album called The Panic of Girls that came out in 2011. And she's amazing to work with. And it was very intimidating at first. Not personally, but just she came across as really warm and easy to get along with. Mm-hmm. And she came in the studio and we talked to her and we had a little meal together. And it's like, okay, I'm calming down. It's okay.
Yeah.
And then she goes in the vocal booth and starts singing. And it's just like, gosh.
Wow.
And it's like she's just iconic voice coming through the speakers. And you're like, oh, my God. But, I got used to that. And
the things you can get used to.
Well, and she was very creative. It was like we would eat together and then work on music. And we'd have a dinner conversation about something or a story that one of us would tell or she would tell. And we'd all just have a conversation. And then we'd start working on a new song idea, the music. And she'd be off like writing stuff down. And then she steps up to the vocal mic to do like a scratch vocal. And it's all about what we just talked about at dinner. She wrote a whole song about something that
just happened.
Just saying. It was like, you know, so she's really sharp and really fun to work with.
Well, I like that, the Epicurean ideal, like the good things that happen around good food and good people, and then the movement from that to
creation.
I like having that being part of the process in the studio if there's time, eating together.
Yeah, well, I feel like for me personally, I've discovered that food grounds me in a way that few other things do. It's like, okay, I'm here now.
Right. And I think it brings us physically together.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're sort of in the same vibration or something. And then also, you know, meals are kind of a sacrament or a place where we like share stories.
Yeah.
And it's just natural.
Community and food just naturally go together.
Yeah.
I'm curious about your songwriting process in general. Have you always been writing tunes, writing songs? Are you a writer outside of songwriting? There's 5 questions there, just in case you lost count.
I wish I was. Maybe I'll try. I'll try to do that because like I was saying before we started the show, I edit audiobooks,
mm-hmm.
and I listen to a lot and read a lot of audiobooks,
mm-hmm.
and I'm getting more of an overview of writing and the different kinds of styles and genres and. And it inspires me to try to approach that. But no, I'm pretty much just a songwriter.
Mm-hmm.
And that was my way into writing and poetry and stuff. I, even as I started playing music in my teens, it took me a couple years to write a song. I was a musician first.
You were playing other people's music.
I played
music.
Bass and I played other people's music.
And then?
In high school. And then I started writing songs like, I was like 18 or something after playing for a few years. I don't know why. I was slow. It's like a kid who starts talking late or something.
And then forming complete sentences. Yeah,
right.
I was listening to a podcast about
Haruki Murakami?
Murakami, yeah.
Murakami.
Okay. So his story was he was 29 and he hadn't written. He was just an avid reader. And he was at a baseball game and saw this mediocre baseball player playing and people supporting him. And he's like, if this guy's not the best at baseball and he's still doing it, then I should just write and I won't have to be the best and I'll just do it.
That's interesting. Because like, my first songs, because I could play pretty well by the time I wrote. And I was listening to a lot of like progressive rock and stuff as a kid. And so my first songs had like a million chords. there was no focal point and they were just like,
and simplifying.
And once I learned to simplify, I was like, oh my God, I get it. and my writing improved so much when I realized you can, you know, use negative space and not have to.
I think that negative space is the most powerful. Like, anytime there's like a full pause, you're like, whoa.
Yeah.
And then things start again, and you're like, it's a hook.
Totally.
Yeah, totally. Like fishing, like catching the big fish.
Boom.
Like, nice tag.
Yeah, right?
Thank you. And you're a big David Lynch fan outside of this book. And I have read this book before it was announced. And so I was like, oh, great. I've read that before. How has his work influenced you over the years?
Well, I mean, like I said, those songs that he used, there were always songs that really resonated with me in my taste already. And I already knew the song. I already knew Song to the Siren from being a big fan of Cocteau Twins and stuff. Mm-hmm. But
you introduced, James, my friend here, introduced me to them.
Yeah,
I get chills up my spine just when you mention the name Cocteau Twins.
Right. Fans of Cocteau Twins are like that. It's just like...
It's like...
Their entire catalog is just like... Ugh. But, you know, I remember seeing Blue Velvet and then... His work had a real evolution, you know? Like, it went from Blue Velvet and then Twin Peaks came out. And I was like, oh my God, this is like Blue Velvet, but it's like... It's
Blue
like
Velvet.
It's like, but they made it into this like sprawling TV drama for like the mass audience to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but it had some very similar, you know, the confrontation of innocence and horror and, you know, all these different layers that reminded me of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Lost Highway came out, I was really blown away by that movie. I remember we saw it with another couple and. I walked out of that movie going, that was amazing. And the other person was like, the other couple were like, that was horrible. What are you talking
about? Oh, gosh.
And I was like, no.
Wow.
Wow. I was like, he's a genius again. This is like a totally, because Lost Highway has this like, this wrenching pivot in the movie where something happens and you're just like, what the hell is going on? This character has turned into another character. You know? And then he developed that in Mulholland Drive.
Hmm.
In this kind of the same way Blue Velvet was evolved into Twin Peaks, I thought Mulholland Drive is kind of a refinement of stuff he did in Lost Highway. And I think Mulholland Drive is amazing. It's not just one of those movies that's like, he's just messing with us. This doesn't really mean anything. There's like a very definite, like, I think, narrative that he's working in that movie that he just really imaginatively develops. And
which isn't in conflict from the idea that he's messing with this and that doesn't mean anything.
Yeah. Right.
Not in conflict at all.
Of course. He allows that aspect of it to inform to add detail.
And I love that he, in his book, he willingly admits that sometimes like he has no idea where something is going. Something just happened and he's like, oh, we need that.
Well, I know.
Like, we need that in it.
And I feel like that is part of my process too.
But that's the way it all is like this thing happens and you run with it. And if you, to me, the genius of it is that that is like process, that is life, that is reality. And we don't, we're shielded from that all the time.
And, and creativity works in that you don't know what you have right away. You just know it feels right. And then you just say, well, I'm just going to run with this, even though I don't consciously have any idea.
Well, and that's, I think that swings back to when we were talking about creating something and then you were getting ready to play and you're like, oh, I don't need to apologize. Like, I don't need to say I'm sorry. I don't need to explain. And that's something that I'm challenged by because I want to get up there and be like, guys, I'm doing this thing and I didn't want to do this, but this is the thing that was sticking with me and I want to explain why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I'm like, wait, I don't have to do that.
Right.
I just, here's my thing. No apologies. Mm. This is what I did. And that's really hard for me.
I know. It's hard. Just in a social situation, not to succumb to that sort of like I'm going to overexplain this before I do it, you know.
Let me tell you
everything. I feel like it's really difficult because art is so personal that you just want people to understand it, the way you created it.
And yet I think half the time you don't even understand.
Exactly.
Why'd you do this?
But to be open to the fact that everyone will experience it in their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's none of your business.
Exactly.
And there's nothing to defend.
The art you're creating is for you.
And David Lynch says something in the book about he doesn't want to talk about interpretations.
And he talks about he hates like director's cuts where they talk about things. He's like, no, it's a thing that stands alone. And if you have to explain it, then it loses value or whatever.
Well, when attending friends' art shows, someone that you're intimately acquainted with, but you haven't really seen the art, and you see all this art together, and very often I've gone to those and it's looked like an autobiography, and I'm like, you really want to say all this to all these people? This is the story that you really want to tell these people? But because I know them, I know a story, so it means something to me that's different than it means to the artist,
right?
And it's different than a stranger, the audience,
all those
who's
people
watching
right?
Yeah.
And that's,
we're all just reflecting off each other, and it's just mirrors and smoke and chaos, and we're trying to make sense of it.
And art.
Mirror.
And art.
Yeah. We're all bits of a
make
shattered
cool
mirror.
Ooh,
that's stuff.
Back at each other.
Absolutely.
I talk about that all the time. I mean, people say something about me, and I'm like, thank you for reflecting that, because I don't see it, but I'm becoming it because you are reminding me.
Well, I think that's what
you're telling
here for.
Me.
Yeah. I mean, you wonder why the wave of undifferentiated energy needed to reflect back on itself like this and make us all individual experiences.
Yeah.
But I think it wants to experience itself.
Yeah.
Like I know. But I'm just saying, sometimes I think that.
I believe you. I believe you.
So we're getting towards the end of the show. Did you have another song that you'd like to share, or would you rather me do rapid fire? Because you'll be here next Sunday as well.
I will.
And so we can do rapid fire questions then, if you had another song, or I can just ask.
I guess I can play this other song. I mean, we can do rapid fire next week then.
Okay. And I think Jess is coming on next week as well.
Oh, cool.
So.
Jesse Kilgus?
Yes.
That's great.
Don't quote me on that.
I think I saw her name somewhere.
Yes, yes.
This was a song that I wrote in response to the movie Inland Empire, which was David Lynch's last feature film.
Ah, yes.
Which, again, was a development to me of what was going on in Mulholland Drive, but it just goes off. And Laura Dern's the star, and her character becomes so splintered, her identity is just fragmented into a million pieces in this movie, and then it just keeps going.
Yeah.
And it kind of never comes back.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very strange film.
Mm-hmm.
And so this isn't exactly like this was before I was in something like book club. So, but it did inspire me. And with the idea of, we think that we are a singular entity, but maybe we're not.
Yeah. Or maybe, what does that even mean?
Yeah. Maybe our, and again, I think it kind of, it's like a sort of a cousin song to Nothing. You know, it's about a sort of a shattering of ego or shattering of that sense of I.
Great. Let's get shattered.
It's called Alone. Let's see. You just let go. It's overhead and down below. You can't hold in the words you know, and all you did
When you're alone, you pray to you inside. Nothing that you can say will make it right. Here on the line between the day and darkest night, you'll find your way back to the light. You'll find your way. But not today. You can't hold on. You tried to play the same old song. Words they go, and all we say is all we know. Oh, oh. When you're alone, you pray it's you inside. Nothing that you can say we'll make it right. Here is the line between the day and darkest night. You'll find your way back to the light. You'll find your way. Hey,
mics up. Thank you so much for coming. And Empty Orchestra is next, exploring the dynamic relationship between song and singer in the context of karaoke. Thank you, James and Nisa, for being here. Thank you so much, Charlie, for being here. And we'll be back next week. I'll leave you with a word, take it or leave it. Refek.